Well, welcome to the Art of Relationships podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Tim.
And here we are again with an opportunity to just visit with you from the beautiful campus of Biola University.
Stunningly beautiful.
It is. It's awesome. And school in session, it's great. So, Tim, we've been talking the last couple of episodes about friendships.
Yeah.
And there is one topic that we get asked a lot of questions about, and it's about having friendships after you're married. With both, you know, of course, having a friendship with somebody that you've always been a friend with has been usually no problem and there are no concerns or issues. But it's when you're married and now the question comes up, can you have a friendship with an opposite sex person? That is, if you have now a very intimate relationship with somebody in marriage, is that intimacy able to be shared with somebody outside of marriage of opposite sex?
I'm amazed how this, how much this question comes up. I would say this is probably one of the number one questions whenever we talk about friendship. We get this one all the time. We teach a class on Christian relationships, and students are really concerned about this. Like, because I think a lot of them do have opposite sex friendships, and they want to have them, or should they have them after they get married? And we also should mention that there's not complete agreement on this topic. We have this great teaching team. We teach this class made up of three couples, and there's some disagreement among the couples on whether this is possible and what would that look like, even if it was possible and things like that. So this is a great topic. I bet you a ton of listeners are really interested in how we're going to, and how we answer it is the answer, Chris.
Yeah, well, let's.
The definitive answer for all of Christianity.
Yep,
that's that's a huge weight. I feel that deeply.
Yeah. Well, you're carrying it well, Tim.
Thank you.
So let's try this. Let's ask and let's dive into the heart of this. Is it ever appropriate to have a friendship outside of marriage with somebody else that's not your spouse, that's of opposite sex, that is of a strong, deep, intimate nature?
So on one level, all of us would agree that couples can be friends. And that this friendship can exist and it can be great and it's fun. And as I already said, Lisa and I have a certain level of friendship, but it's always within the context of us as a couple or getting together as couples with other people. The controversial part of it is, can it be more than that?
Yeah.
Can I have friendship with someone, the spouse of someone, and that it go beyond that? So in other words, maybe we have an interest in the arts and Noreen just doesn't, but me and this other person, opposite sex person, we want to go out to an art gallery together and we go and do that. And Noreen knows about it, right? And her spouse knows about it and they're okay with it. Philosophically, I can sign off on that. Practically, no, because Noreen, couples have to agree on this issue, and Noreen's uncomfortable with that, and I am uncomfortable in some ways too, but we're academics, we love to talk about this philosophically. So philosophically, I can see in some situations where that would be okay.
Okay, let's define maybe some terms then for all of us here. I think maybe this comes down to identifying what a friendship and what kind of friendship and the level of the friendship.
Yes.
So
yeah.
it even starts with boundaries. And there are certain emotional levels and boundaries that I'm advocating for, and that I think you are too, that stay very strong. That is, they're identified, and these boundaries are important in a marriage. We recognize that.
Yes.
A marriage is
yes.
something that has intimacy,
yes.
not only physical, but emotional and spiritual. Anytime, and they're reserved only for that marital relationship. So I think we can agree on there are certain boundaries that can never be crossed.
Yes. No matter what.
Yes. No matter what. And I think then the question is always, in an opposite sex friendship during marriage, when does that boundary get crossed? And you said for you and Noreen, for example, while philosophically you can agree that there's a that there are ways in which there's a permeability, there's maybe a openness in some respects, in practicality, those boundaries are pretty strong.
Yes.
So how would listeners know the difference if they've gotten near that boundary and that territory is kind of at a gray area? So going to an art gallery seems to me to be one of those borderline gray areas if the other partner or spouse is uncomfortable with it. Now, all of a sudden, you have to bring in the other person's that you're married to, their level of comfortness, and it seems like there has to be agreement there.
Yes, but these boundaries you're talking about, which I like. I like that a lot. But that those can be broken within a double date. They can be broken in the context of three couples, right? Three couples go to the art gallery, right? And let's say I'm spending time with the spouse of another person. Though we're in public, we're with the other couples. Noreen's there, but you know she's looking at other pieces of art, and sometimes we break away. And I'm kind of joking with this other spouse, you know, nudging her, laughing. We have inside jokes, sort of kind of flirting. That flirting can happen anywhere. Right. So I like your emotional boundaries, and I think those emotional boundaries can be crossed even within a context that most people would say is okay. Like, I don't think anybody would say, no, you better not go to an art gallery with three other couples because you might become attracted to one of the spouses. Well, the answer to that is yes. That's a boundary that can never be crossed, but that can happen in any context, Chris.
Sure, yeah. So any context that happens. So how do you know that? So what? So we are saying there are clear, I would say, emotional, spiritual, physical boundaries.
Yes.
Even inside jokes can actually create an intimacy between two people in the context, even in a public setting. You could be sitting around in a room talking and sharing and having, and then there could be connections that can be unhealthy. And so how do you know the difference, Tim, when you start to get into that area?
Man, let's talk about this. That's really interesting. I don't know if I have a great answer for this. So what crosses the line from joking to flirting? Again, we're all friends, a bunch of us here at Biola. We actually have a marriage group that's great. And laughter, I would say, is a huge part of this marriage group. And we kid each other. We joke with each other, right? And it's great. It's fun. And the wives have freedom to joke with the husbands and stuff like that, right? But when does the joking cross the line into flirting? Now, I think the only person who might be able to tell is me when this joking has crossed into flirting. In other words, there's an emotional connection with this person that's going into the territory of an emotional connectedness where this is more than just friends. I'm joking with you in such a way that I'm trying to get a response from you. And the response isn't just laughter. The response is, I kind of sort of want you to like me in a way that's not appropriate. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think this is where it comes down to understanding something about who we are, how we're designed as humans, our desire and our interest in connecting with other people, right? Feeling wanted and needed. So in a relationship in which there might be some issues or struggles going on, it's very different than in a very strong, solid marriage and relationship.
Good. That's good.
Listen to this interesting study. They brought four people into a room, and two men and two women. Now, they were not married, and in fact, they were mostly strangers to each other. And they had them play a quick card game. And so they partnered up. There was male-female on one team and another male-female on the other team. And as they played this card game, one couple who, again, did not know each other before the experiment, was given inside information on how to cheat. And so they were told, listen, under the table, two taps with your foot on your partner means this, three taps means this, one tap means something, whatever. And they ended up, of course, being able to have the advantage, not just kind of win the game, but what happened, interestingly enough, were the couple who had this inside information, who shared this kind of inside joke, who shared this kind of almost secretive, like, hey, we've got something here. At the end of the study, rated each other and their relationship and their interest in having a relationship stronger than the other couple.
Yeah.
They felt more intimately connected in some ways, or heard or understood, or, and so that relationship was actually highly rated compared to the other one. Now, what that means to me, I think, is that as we share, and as you, like you said, Tim, there are certain ways in which you are the one who can decide this and are aware of this, is what's going on in your heart at the time.
Yes.
Right? What's happening with you and your emotions and your need to be connected to this person? And are you getting something out of it? You said getting a response from the other person. That could be pretty powerful. powerful because now all of a sudden that response is, oh, they notice me, they like me, I like them liking me. And we all know, you know, an intimate relationship is all about that need to feel right, connected with somebody. We satisfy those needs of feeling each other's, you know, interests and connection. And now it's reinforcing. And I like that feeling of being reinforced.
Yes.
So now we're running into maybe this boundary issue that comes in. We have to identify that in our marriages. Where is my boundary? And then, of course, now my spouse, do they at all ever feel like I am being too connected to the to another person?
No, and I like that. So let's put it in a different category and work the problem from a totally different angle.
Okay.
So at Biola University, let's say I'm interested in one aspect of communication. Let's say nonverbal communication. There's another female scholar here who is equally interested in nonverbal communication as well, right? And the opportunity comes to co-teach a class together. So we decide we're going to co-teach a class together. Why not bring two different perspectives, two different gendered perspectives on nonverbal communication? We are going to co-create a class together. We are going to teach the class together. And that means, you know, how much it takes to teach a class together. We're going to have to meet to talk about it, right? Well, all of that is the card playing study. We now have things that are just between me and her, right? Noreen's not at every meeting that we're meeting, and she's certainly not there when we're teaching the class together. We're spending time together doing this. So in your estimation, is it okay for me to co-teach the class?
Yes, I think it's okay to co-teach a class, and what you have to be very careful of or thoughtful about
absolutely
is any boundary, and that is inside information with another person that shared that if you could, if Noreen or your spouse was sitting there, would they feel uncomfortable with some of the inside joking that's going on?
Yes, but so then here's where I think some of the people that I've debated this issue with, I think have a point, and here's their point, and I think it's a good one. So let's say Noreen, after 2 years, says, okay, I've become uncomfortable with this situation. Well, I would stop immediately, right? And that's just a great principle of marriage. You both have to be in on this. But then I think the good point would be to sit down with Noreen and say, but why? Like, what's happened that has made you grown uncomfortable with this? Is it something that I'm doing? Is it something that you're picking up on that I'm not picking up on? What are the reasons that now you're uncomfortable? Does it have to do with matters of trust? Okay. And by the way, if Noreen says, for whatever reason, I'm struggling with trust issues. Well, okay. A spouse needs to have the freedom to do that, and I need to pull away. Okay. So what we just described, I think, is a totally perfect scenario. Let's take it out of the classroom, though, and you have two friends, two different couples, and they have an interest in art. Can't they go to an art museum? Again, now this is presumed that both of the other spouses have to sign off on it. But couldn't we take the very same principles we took in the classroom and apply it to the art?
Yeah, I think it's a great analogy. I'll play devil's advocate, and it goes like this. The other side would say, that is, encounter. In one situation, it is something that is done as part of your career, part of your job. You have an interest, but you're also getting paid to teach this class. This is something that's required in your day-to-day operations. You can kind of make almost an emotional distance from it versus you're choosing outside of that during free time or during a time of friendship to invest with somebody else in something that's outside. Now, that's the counter argument that I would – here's where I think we're running up against a very interesting finding in psychology, and they did this with Facebook recently just to update the studies, but it's something that's been found for a long time. Men are always much more angry, or will find this much greater of an affront or of a brokenness of trust if they find out that there is some sort of physical affair going on with their spouse. And women are almost always more concerned and deeply disturbed and troubled if it's an emotional affair. So on Facebook, what they did is they had people find out that they uncovered a couple that was dealing with an affair, and they found out there was physical, and it was just a made up game they were playing, and so they knew it wasn't their partner. But the men consistently found that if they discovered a Facebook affair that pointed to or was uncovering a possibility of a physical affair, they were much more upset than women were. Now, women were obviously upset with this affair, but if it was an emotional affair, it really influenced women much harder and much at a much harder, difficult, or strong level than it did the men. So the answer seems to be a little bit in gender differences when it comes to affairs or possibility or broken trust, that sometimes maybe we see it a little bit differently.
Yes, but let me push back on your pushback by first saying where we agree with each other. We absolutely agree that there's an emotional boundary that can be crossed. And when it's crossed, it's time to get out.
Yes.
Right. You move away from that friendship. You stop teaching that class. Mm-hmm. Right. You stop working with that person in a work setting. Okay. So it's the emotional boundary that's when it's crossed is the fundamental issue.
Yes.
Right? That can happen teaching with each other. Mm-hmm. It can happen working with each other on a project at work, and it can happen going to an art exhibit as friends. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. And the other issue is, does my spouse trust me, and is my spouse okay with this situation? Now, here's the counter I often get. But why put yourself in that situation? Mm-hmm. Okay? Why needlessly you and this person go to an art museum that's needlessly tempting it? I'd say, okay. But so is co-teaching with each other. And so if that's the criteria we're using, and so is doing a project with each other, my goodness, doing a work project where now you're spending perhaps late nights and weekends, and now you're texting like crazy and sending each other emails like crazy because this is a work project, that to me is more of a recipe for disaster than going to the art museum. And I think co-teaching could be a nightmare because you actually have an excuse every time you email that person or say, oh, honey, I'm so sorry, but we got to get together because we're grading, right? So if the issue is I'm going to protect myself from all possibilities, then I think readers are going to react, listeners are going to react against that like I do. Well, then, okay, then we're never going to do opposite sex anything with each other other than get together casually. And I'm not comfortable with that in the workplace. I'm not comfortable with that outside of the workplace. Mm-hmm. Again, the issue is trust. And I'm not saying this is for every couple, because remember, I've already said practically, even though philosophically, I'm hearing this argument. I know my wife is now going, nope. Although Noreen would sign off, I think, on me co-teaching with a female faculty member. That's interesting. So you see what I'm saying? It's the boundary that we're interested in. The context can be multiple contexts.
I think this is really helpful for, I think, listeners to process, because I think many of them will deal with this. Let's take your analogy at a different level. I think you're describing, Tim, in my opinion, you're describing the ability to go to an art museum, the ability to teach a class together with a member of the opposite sex as philosophically and even in many ways practically, so long as it doesn't cross an emotional boundary,
right,
then it's appropriate and it's not necessarily dangerous if the person, they go into it with the right heart and attitude.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I think that for many of us I don't really always want to, you know, narrow this down to genders, but let's go ahead and try and continue with this analogy. I think for you, maybe for me, that idea of emotional connectedness with somebody, even skirting that boundary a little bit, doesn't seem all that difficult or painful. It doesn't bring up much trust. But you just said that Noreen would really kind of maybe struggle and go, Now, let me just try the next. What about if we try this analogy? What if I decided that for me, physical touch was really a language that I enjoyed? Now, I don't like to go to art museums, but I love to hold hands, or I love to put my arm around somebody. I don't ever want to have sex with them, but I want to get as close as possible to them, and I love to hug them. And it's not my spouse, but see, physical touch for me means something, and so I just like to be friends and show affection to people, sometimes even kiss them on the cheek. Now, am I now starting to get into an area that is for some like, wait, how close, but this is just a class on nonverbal, and so we're demonstrating what it means to be close nonverbally and how you can share affection physically with somebody.
Yeah, I agree with that. Agree with that. But so not to get overly personal, but when we greet each other as couples, we have a core group of couples, right? Yeah. We always hug each other.
Sure.
The husbands hug the wives, right? So on that level, it's happening, right?
Yeah.
So I think we're okay with that.
Right.
Now, and by the way, if I saw one of those wives, and let's say we just come across each other at Target, mm-hmm. I may give her a hug, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so help me understand what your point is.
The difference would be, to me, I think, when you end up doing something like greeting somebody or saying hi, or in the context of six people and you're having a friendship and you're talking, that's done in a certain safe context. I think you start to get into a place that's unsafe and a little bit more dangerous, and something that I personally would want to avoid, and that is anytime I'm trying to explore something emotionally with somebody, having an inside laugh, having a joke, doing something outside in which I'm building a relationship with somebody, is the beginning of an emotional connection that's probably normal and okay in some people's eyes. For me, it begins to say that my emotional connection, these bridges that I start to make with somebody, no one else is there. Just us went to this art museum. I now have inside information about somebody. I'm trying to draw a parallel to say, okay, let's see if we can extend that into the spiritual realm or into the physical realm. So could I start holding somebody in a certain way, with holding hands with them on a regular basis? Even if I'm in the context of six people in the same room, can I put my arm around them and sit really close and enjoy a movie? Now, you're starting to now see that that's uncomfortable in some respects, yes. because it's clearer.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I think the physical boundaries are clearer than the emotional, but I think they're both equally to be avoided or thought or careful. And so for me, that it comes down to personal, the way we see this, and as what is borderline and what makes people uncomfortable. So if I saw two people who were not married to each other in the context of six people in the room, and they're having a very intimate conversation about something, my antenna go up as if, okay, I hope and everything is, they're not, they're certainly, now, just like if I would see them holding hands, or their arms around each other, or extending a long hug, and in fact, keeping it that way, I would say I'm beginning to see, is there something that is borderline intimate being involved here that could be leading in somebody maybe to a place where they don't want to go.
So, okay, so I agree with like the hand. I can't imagine holding Elisa's hand as we're talking about something at a get-together.
And I would say you can't. That's the same thing physically as emotionally. I cannot imagine somebody going out with somebody to an art museum and sharing something intimate and involved. Now, I know it's not intimate, but it's emotionally bonding for
right,
them.
Right, but Chris, that's going to happen if you co-teach a class together. If you co-teach a class together, you're going to have inside jokes. You're going to have information your spouse is not aware of. And if people listening in the corporate world do a project with somebody of the opposite sex, they're going to have insider information, inside jokes, certain things that they are privy to that their spouse is not privy to.
And I also think that's why, right? There's more emotional or physical affairs in workplaces in which there's close connections with people. If they have to work on projects, you have to be extremely more careful and draw stronger boundaries.
And I would agree with that. And I would say that would apply to the art gallery couple.
Yeah. And I would, and so you and I, here's where we disagree, because I would say don't go to the art gallery.
Why?
I would say, well, because I believe why put yourself in a connection where, why would I hold the hand of somebody else for an extended period of time and give her a secret handshake?
Well, I'm not talking about that.
Well, I'm
not saying about hand-holding. The physical thing kind of skews it for me a little bit, because I can't imagine doing that with the person that I co-teach with. We're not sitting there holding hands. But I might give her a hug every time I see her before our class, maybe, if she's a good friend. Well, okay, but so... You've already said it's okay to co-teach together.
And do
projects in the corporate world.
Well, because that's part of the world. I mean, we work together. We lived, in a place in which you have to have these connections. I just think we sometimes let our guard down with emotional connections and intimacy that we would never let down with physical boundary, borderline questionable things. Like, I just think if you were to teach this class with somebody and demonstrate nonverbals of an intimate couple, but you would... And you had to do that on a regular basis and show affection.
Oh, and I would never do that. Yeah. But to me, it's the issue, Chris. To me, it's the issue of I need to examine myself, because if I'm not good, any context is dangerous.
Right. I think that's right.
So I need to be searching my heart. I don't want to just put certain things taboo. Because I do think people need to work together. And yeah. I think they need, I think that's to have a good, vibrant working relationship that is a friendship.
Yeah.
I mean, if I taught this class for 5 years, I would say we're good friends.
Yeah.
And we're getting together. Our spouses are getting together. We're getting together. But I'm with this person in a different context away from Noreen.
Yeah. And I think what you, I think when you draw the you know, and you have said, if my spouse feels uncomfortable, yes. I'm going to not only not do that, but yeah. we are also then going to have this conversation to yeah. say, and that's where we're searching our hearts, right? Yeah. And asking this other, is this maybe her issue or yeah. a trust yeah. issue? Yeah. And or is this something that she's picking up that maybe I'm blind to? And it becomes this.
No, that's good.
That's the word of that conversation. Am I blind to something or is she overly sensitive? And that's becomes a question for your marriage and your relationship.
No, I agree with that, Chris. That's good. And a blind spot's an apt way to say it, because mm-hmm. if it's a blind spot, I don't see it.
Yeah.
But your spouse could see it mm-hmm. or other people could see it. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's the whole package thing of I need to be open to the input of others, my spouse. And again, going to the art museum, I hope you would say, hey, all right, so I'm not sure I would do this, but is everything okay? Is uh-huh. is this going past just the love of art? Yeah. That is what a good friend would do.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think that would apply to the corporate project. Like, man, you guys are spending a lot of time together on this project. Is mm-hmm. is everything okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're fine. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, and that's good because you have to have that that type of communication. I think it points back to in your marriage and in your relationship, are you able to talk about not only when things maybe yeah. feel uncomfortable, yep. Are you able to share that and to be heard by the other person and say, you know, can we just talk about something? This is starting to really maybe kind of bother me a little bit and I'm not sure why. And that no, those are good conversations.
And even to have be able to say that, I'm not sure why it bothers me. Mm-hmm. And it even bothers me that I'm bothered by it. Mm-hmm. But can we at least talk about this? And the minute I get defensive mm-hmm. about going to an art gallery with a female friend, the minute we can't talk about it anymore,
yeah.
then guess what? I need to stop going good. To the art. And good. I need to stop co-teaching.
Yeah.
If it's like, honey, this is my job. You don't need to be right? Whoa, dude, something's going on right there. And so I think in all those contexts, if the lines of communication close, that's a big indicator that something else is going on.
And I think, Tim, I think that's a great way to end this is making sure that we maintain and keep not only this communication together as couples, but also that we, when we do, when there is uncomfortableness, we search our hearts and then we do reiterate and reestablish boundaries that encourage and show the other person, listen, I'm committed to you. I've made this vow to you.
Yep.
Your heart is what's important to
me. And your opinion is more important yep. than the opinion of other yep. people.
That's a good
some
thing.
Philosophical debate,
yep.
right? Hey, before we close, can you just admit for the listeners that I was right? Can you just one tap on the table? One tap is you were right. That's it. We can use a nonverbal.
How about if I wink at you if you're right or not? And then you'll know. That way our listeners can make up their own decision.
He's winking like crazy. Just trust me.
Hey, listen, thanks for joining us on The Art of Relationships. And we'll see you next week. Go to our website at cmr.biola.edu for more information, more blogs and podcasts and events coming up. And Tim?
Great conversation, Chris. Great.